It is not in my mind to ask questions that cannot be answered. That is the soul standing upon the crossroad of vacillation. You search for wisdom, but achieve only a stasis of will.
Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. This is episode 69, very nice, and we are recording this June 22nd, Monday. This probably, as discussed in the last episode, while I am recording on Mondays, most likely will not be ready for listening until Tuesday. That's maybe possibly in the future once I've settled into the new schedule a little bit more, might be able to fit in enough time to both record and edit, post, etc. But as of right now, that is not really in the cards, at least not today. We'll see what we manage in the future, but yeah, so this is being recorded Monday, June 22nd. So if there's any information, and just as a note, it's being recorded in the earlier day, so if there's any information that comes out later on in the day that counters anything I have to say, or anything that comes out on Tuesday that counters anything I have to say, that is why. Admittedly, that's part of why I date my episodes and stuff anyways, is just, you know, what might have been said, heard, or whatever else when things are recorded may not be accurate when you actually get a chance to listen to it. So, I mean, that's just kind of a natural given, I think, but I just want to make sure that it's clear and obvious. So, but anywho, so yeah, it's actually kind of cool. My last episode, for those who did not listen to it yet, I didn't have like the big old opening and everything else. So this is the first time since I looked it up. I think it was February was the last time I recorded. So goddamn, it has been a long, long, long time. But it was kind of nice to actually do the little opening tagline and everything else, so it was kind of a cool thing. But, yeah, so let's go ahead and get into it, though. As far as what's been going on in my neck of the woods, I highly recommend you listen to the last episode for kind of a little bit of a update on everything going on there, too, but just to extrapolate a little bit further. I mean, not a whole lot's been going on in my neck of the woods as far as hobbying and stuff goes. Just, you know, this pandemic and everything has kind of prevented events from occurring and such. So, we are finally getting to a point where there are places opening up and whatnot. I still have not restarted doing events yet myself, either participating or running. And that's partially due to the pandemic itself and the nature of everything going on, but also to my new work schedule. Mixed bag of results, I guess, overall is the best thing I can say. On the one hand, I have a lot more time for family stuff, which is nice. You know, I get to spend a lot more time with Krista than I used to before, when I was working third shift, because basically she would get out of work and get home around like 6 o'clock, and I would be heading out the door around 8:30. And that was, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that's what was going on. And then with the weekends, though, we did get to spend time together every other weekend. We had all the kids. And then on those opposing weekends from that, we could go out and game, or run events, or whatever we wanted to do. My new schedule now, I do get to, once again, see her more frequently. I actually get to sleep in the same bed, which is nice. You know, every night I get to be home when she is home. But it does have the added disadvantage of trying to find a time to do anything with like a whole day of just, she doesn't work, I don't work, let's do something, doesn't really happen at this point. You know, we have the kids still every other weekend, which I have my days off on those weekends. On the weekends that I don't have kids, I am typically working. And then during the week, when I have my days off, I still have my boys, at least, on those days. So, yeah, so it just has definitely put a major wrench in the spokes, so to speak, of hobbying and events and all that stuff. But once again, with everything going on anyways, it's not really a big concern at the moment. But I definitely want to get back into it, especially with Ninth coming out. So I'm going to have to try to monkey around with things and try to make some magic happen soon, because I got the itch to game, but I don't have the time to do so, unfortunately. And the same thing with even like the whole recording thing and right now, whatnot. This morning, I've been up for a couple hours and stuff at this point, but it's like by the time I get up and get myself woken up, drink some caffeine, eat some food, and just kind of get my brain in the space ready to do stuff, I've already cut down the amount of time I have free to, you know, work on recording, or if I wanted to hobby or whatever else. Hell, with my schedule today specifically, I'm looking at not getting home until probably close to 8:30, 9 o'clock, which is still a good time as far as being home goes. But then I have to open tomorrow morning. I have to be to work by 5:15. So there's not a whole lot of time to also fit in the ever elusive sleep. And while when I was in my 20s, it was like, sleep's, you know, I could sleep when I'm dead. Yeah, not anymore. My body just cannot do it. Body and brain are like, nope, we actually need to get some modicum of sleep. Which is why even too, with my new schedule, on Sunday nights, I actually get to sleep in, Monday mornings, I guess, rather, with the new schedule. But in turn, I find myself sleeping, like, making up for all the lost sleep from all the other nights and stuff in the previous week. All right, well, I'm up until 10, 11, 12, just trying to do stuff around the house, spend time with her, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm back at work at 5:15 once again. So, yeah, it's a little rough. It's a little rough. But, of course, none of us do this hobby with, or at least I should say very few of us, are able to do this hobby and have, you know, all the free time in the world to do it. So I'm going to make it happen one way or another. So right now, though, I am still working on some projects. I have a lot of personal projects I need to really get caught up on and stuff. But I have a few commission projects and stuff like that, too, that due to the pandemic just got kind of sidelined and everything, because there's no way to deliver things. There's no way to get things done, you know, and so on and so forth. So. But I need to get caught up on that stuff now that things are kind of, I say things are winding down, like, oh, the pandemic's over. It's far from fucking over, but everybody's trying to go make life go back to normal. So we'll see. But anywho, yeah, that's about it. Like I said, as far as what's going on in my neck of the woods, new job, the thing that's affecting everybody's lives, you know, pandemics and protests, riots and police brutality. What a wonderful time to be alive, really. 2020 is indeed a giant shit show. But that being said, for those of us of the hobbying nerdy persuasion, there are some mild blips of joy on the horizon, namely with the upcoming release of 9th edition. So now there's been a lot of stuff that has happened since last recording, but there's also been a lot of stuff that hasn't happened since last recording in terms of the hobby, just because, well, without any events going on, with GW shutting down manufacturing for a time and so on and so forth, you just weren't seeing new products being shown off. You weren't seeing much of anything, really. We're finally starting to see GW get back more into the normal flow of things. The larger amount of new releases. You know, they finally have all these new releases. Engine War came out not that long ago. I think War of the Spider just came out this past weekend. I am sorry if I am misspeaking. But they've been rapid firing things again, and it's kind of got... I went from, well, there's, you know, nothing going on to, holy crap, there's too much going on. Yeah, War of the Spider is out as well, it looks like, at this point. And then I believe starting this weekend, we are going to see pre-orders start for the final part of Psychic Awakening, Pariah, which is going to mainly focus on Necrons and the Adeptus Sororitas, I believe. So we got a lot going on there. So, but we're going to talk more about 9th edition and what we know and what I feel about it and stuff. I'm sure I'm going to miss a few things just because there's once again been such rapid fire, just one after another type of information coming out lately. For just as like an overall spoiler alert, I am very excited for 9th edition. Everything we've been seeing so far seems to me like Games Workshop taking the, and I'm sure plenty of people will disagree with me here, but whatever, don't fucking care. Now, this is how I feel about it. If you disagree, by all means, if you got constructive criticism, want to debate it, of course, by all means, hit up the Facebook page, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. More than happy to have a conversation about it. Once again, as long as everybody's fair, constructive, and whatever else, you know, that's all I ask. And it doesn't even have to be towards me. Just, you know, be polite. You know, crude language is fine, but when you're just being insulting and being a dick, that's different. But yeah, I do feel like they're kind of taking the Civilization VI business model approach. And for those of you unfamiliar, or those of you just curious, when Civ 5 came out, it was a garbage game for the most part. And then it came out with a bunch of expansions that actually made it a pretty solid game overall. And then when Civ 6 launched, they were like, okay, rather than going back to the drawing board and kind of the EA Sims style of sequels where they go, everybody loves all this stuff we added in, so let's take it all back and then make them rebuy all that shit again. Civ 6 came out and was like, okay, everybody loved all these things about Civ 5 after we added all this expansion content. And so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take all that stuff that everybody loves, and we're going to keep it. And then we're going to take the things people don't love, and we're going to trash it. And then we're going to add some new stuff on top of it. So rather than the whole, you know, starting from scratch and making it a really shitty slog for consumers to get back to the thing that they loved and enjoyed with just, you know, fancy window dressing, GW's taking the same approach, I feel like, with 9th edition, going, all right, a lot of people really loved 8th edition, but they had some issues and qualms with it. You know, there are definite problems with 8th, and I'm sure when 9th comes out, there's going to be problems with it too. You know, some of them are just going to be oversights, bugs, so to speak. But there's going to be plenty of stuff that's just, yeah, you know, that was great in theory, but it's terrible in practice. And GW will, you know, probably try to address it if 8th edition has been any source of their general mindset nowadays. But that's not guaranteed even. They might just be like, well, whatever, fuck it. It is what it is. So, but overall, I feel like what we're seeing so far with 9th is looking to be a more open and tactical game, you know, that does address deep inherent core issues with the core mechanics of 8th edition while keeping the things in place that people have enjoyed. So, but we're going to go ahead and take a quick little break here. After the break, we'll get into some of those specific thoughts and feelings that I have on what we've seen so far about 9th. Once again, there's a lot of ground to cover. Doubt we'll cover it all today, but we got time until 9th comes out. So, but anyway, I'll catch you guys on the flip side of the break. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Regimental Vox. Follow The Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/TheRegimentalVox today.
Welcome back to The Regimental Vox. Before we get into it any further, I did want to make a correction from something I said earlier on while I was actually taking a quick little break and taking care of a few things. I did see that the Warhammer community site had updated with the table of contents of Pariah, and it is not Sisters of Battle and Necrons. In fact, it's barely even Necrons. It is primarily just focused on the Inquisition from what I could see in the table of contents. So that might not be a complete table or something like that, but yeah, it looked pretty much just the Inquisition. So let me actually pull that back up and just see if we can double check that. There's some, you know, there's some background information, missions, index, Inquisition, which has a lot of stuff. Heroes and villains, including Illuminor Zaris, and then Theaters of War, which does include a bunch of different places, including Necron Tomb World. But, yeah, there's actually very little in the way of Necrons or anything like that mentioned in this little article. So, once again, I apologize for the mistaken information, but that's why we're making a correction. Secondly, I did just want to mention that if there's extra background noise or anything like that in this episode, I do apologize. It is molten frickin' hot lately, and we don't have AC in the house, so I've got several fans going, which, so it's, you know, at least somewhat livable and survivable. But also, you can hear, like, lawnmowers and stuff potentially going off in the background, cars going by, etc. So, I do apologize. It is just too freaking hot to do otherwise. So, but yeah. So, anywho, well, let's go ahead and start getting into a little bit about the 9th edition release and stuff like that. What do we know? What do we look forward to? Etc. As of right now, we don't have an official launch date or even price point. What we do know is that Indomitus, the box set that they announced a couple weekends ago. What weekend was that? I want to say it was on the 13th that they announced this, off the top of my head, as far as like the contents of the box and stuff like that. And I don't remember the exact date from the previous announcement that 9th edition was coming at all. Right off the top of my head. But that was not too far behind that. Anywho, point is that Indomitus supposedly is not the starter box. It is supposed to be like a limited edition type of box deal. I am personally really hoping that limited edition is not synonymous with, you know, $400, $500, $600 or some crazy shit like that. I'm hoping that, you know, at most it's maybe $200 to $300. Even then, that's gonna take a little bit of convincing on getting my hands on that. However, my birthday is coming up here very shortly, next month. So, if there's a certain sexy lady listening right now, we could just skip anything else for my birthday. Hell, I'll skip Christmas. I don't give a fuck. I really would like this box set, so please and thank you. Anywho, moving on, but, yeah, like I said, we do not have a price point. We do know that Indomitus is due out sometime in July. But as to when specifically, well, let's see here. If Pariah is pre-ordering this weekend and supposed to come out the following weekend, the 4th of July, actually, let freedom ring by letting the Necrons out and about in the wild. There we go. My calendar was being stupid. It was like, come on, let me go further down. I mean, there's only 3 Saturdays, which, not that GW couldn't release on a different day, but it's unusual for them to release on any other day. This is just speculation. This is literally just throwing it out to the wind here and stuff. I would say pre-orders may be going live on the 11th and release on the 25th. Usually with the big giant stuff, they do a 2-week window between. But once again, they kind of do things at their own whim and will, so there's no way to say with certainty what we are looking at overall. So, but beyond that, we know that the initial box set is going to have the limited edition core rulebook. It is going to include quite a substantial amount of models in it, which is both like exciting and very concerning from a price points perspective. But you're looking at a rather large Primaris Marines contingent, as well as a rather large Necrons contingent. So, both of which featuring mountains of new models. In fact, right off the top of my head, I don't think there's a single old model in there at all. Even those models that are based off of old units like the Necron Warriors are totally revamped models with new options and features and stuff too that they didn't have before. So it's not just aesthetical upgrade, it is actually game mechanic upgrade too. So it's a very awesome looking box set. I would really like to get my hands on it. Both I think the new Necron line looks amazing personally. I think it looks absolutely fantastic, and I'm very excited to see what they end up doing with Necrons, because damn, that army has gotten the short end of the stick in 8th edition so badly. Not impossible to win with, not, you know, necessarily total trash, but very, very one note. And admittedly, some of the armies that have been extremely successful have been primarily because of being very one note, such as the Tau, with the whole shield drone and everything else that they had going on there. So, but what we've seen so far with 9th edition, that they're showing off as far as core mechanic changes and stuff, is very much an emphasis on trying to step away from the one note builds. You know, they are definitely trying to drive people towards diversifying their factions and choices and stuff like, well, and like that. And not by, when I say that too, they're actually kind of pushing people towards single faction play. But that trying to open it up so every player that, for example, was playing Adeptus Mechanicus can build a different list and still be competitive. You know, obviously there are some builds that are just naturally not going to be very functional, and some builds are naturally going to be better, but they're not going to have that one note that this is the easy win button, everything else is crap, you know. So if you, there's going to be more options for playstyle. But yeah, you know, 9th edition looks really good in those regards. And though, and as a note too, with that Indominus box, I'm very excited about the Primaris. I know a lot of people are shitting all over it. Oh, it's more Space Marines. But A, at the end of the day, Space Marines are, you know, GW's bread and butter. B, they are a good just jump in and play style army typically in comparison to a lot of the others. So it's a great gateway into the hobby for people. And see, I honestly, personally, I feel like there's a lot of potential there as far as, paint schemes and stuff go. Some armies are kind of limited that they only really look great with certain, you know, combinations of paint schemes and stuff like that. Whereas with Space Marines, you can go super basic and look really good. You can go crazy, out there freehanding shit and look really good, et cetera, et cetera. So, and with all this Assault Primaris stuff coming, you know, I see a great opportunity for me to personally finally start either my Flesh Terrors chapter or Carcharodon's Astra chapter, the Space Sharks. So both of those are, you know, I'm not usually big on Space Marine lore and Space Marines just as a whole myself, but I don't shit all over them like a lot of other people do either. But I've definitely really like those two particular chapters. They do appeal to me, so that's some pretty cool shit. Now, as far as what we know about 9th edition so far and what their kind of goals and stuff, once again, they kind of want to take what worked for 8th and fix the things that didn't, you know. A lot of people's common complaints with 8th edition, you know, namely the soup building. The drive to get as many command points as humanly possible, and in order to do that, you tried to find the most efficient path to command points. And for certain armies, that was a lot easier, namely anything Imperial, because you could, you know, the Loyal 32, or what is it, the Rusty 17 or something like that, you know, you could have these small little detachments that gave you a shit ton of command points that cost you almost no points, so that way your main force had all those points to run with and fuck with and do what they wanted with them. So, now we did know from what we were experiencing in 8th edition, there was a major drive near the end anyways towards single faction play, both from an outside perspective with Frontline Gaming pushing towards that best in faction, the best faction award, In order to pull that off, you had to kind of go mono build in order to do that. But also in the rules writing itself, you were seeing, starting with Codex Space Marines, very much written to be like, hey, so you could totally mix match this and soup it up if you want, but if you're going to go single faction, we're going to give you some bonus stuff. You know, and the Adeptus Sororitas Codex had some stuff like that too. I'm hoping we're going to see a lot more of that with 9th edition when the new actual codexes drop. They are also going to be integrating, you know, I've seen a lot of people bitching and moaning, oh my god, I just spent all this money on Psychic Awakening and now I'm fucked. Thanks, GW, I want out of this hobby because it's a load of bullshit. This is, once again, internet rumor mongering and general just idiocy for the most part. Because of the fact that Psychic Awakening is fully compatible with 9th edition. Yes, I'm sure that eventually all those rules from Psychic Awakening will be wrapped and rolled into the new Codex releases and to future expansion releases and stuff, and at that point, those old books will become invalidated, but not because their rules are invalidated, just because they have presented them into a new package. So, but I would envision that that would still mean that if you have those old books and stuff, as long as the rules are still applicable, you're good to go. You know, even if you don't have the newest other book or whatever else. But time will tell as far as that is concerned specifically. But for the foreseeable future, if you spend a bunch of money on Psychic Awakening, you're fine. You could totally use all that stuff. They want you to use that stuff. That's the, kind of the goal and the drive even, is to give people like this prologue to kind of ease them in and transition them in from 8th edition to 9th edition. So, which is really cool. We've seen a lot of great stuff with Psychic Awakening for the most part. A few factions got left a little bit in the dust and stuff, but most factions have gotten some serious overhauls and upgrades, or at least a lot more flavors to choose from, which is cool. I've only previewed Engine War a little bit. I haven't gotten my hands on the full book yet, but like, you know, for me personally with my Adeptus Mechanicus, there's a lot of shit in there that's very exciting to see. And definitely fills in a lot of holes and gaps that the faction has. Which is something we're seeing with a lot of these factions through Psychic Awakening and new model releases stuff. Is we're seeing a lot of them that they're still going to focus on their particular flavor and playstyle. But places where they had obvious holes, such as the Adeptus Mechanicus having almost zero psychic defense and having zero transport abilities, zero flying abilities, etc. We're seeing new models and units and rules that are adding those features. So, seeing that codex getting more fleshed out. But we're seeing that across the board for a lot of codexes. But anyway, I don't want to get too far into Engine War. Like I said, I haven't actually gotten my hands on the full thing yet or anything, so we're not going to really focus down on that. What I want to focus down on is discussing a little bit more about Psychic Awakening, Ninth Edition. Man, I just, you know, was scrolling through my information here and saw the word Psychic Awakening. My brain just read it out loud. So, but as far as other things that we're seeing that are definitely, I think, are standouts and of interest and note with Ninth Edition, there's also all the changes they're making with terrain and Overwatch. Those two things in particular have been major game changers. Now, obviously, until we get the core rules, these things may turn out to be, you know, false excitement. They may not actually be as beneficial as we thought, or they may actually end up, you know, it sounds good in theory and sounds good on paper, even once you get all the rest of the rules and compare everything, and once you put all the puzzle pieces together and go, yeah, this still sounds great. But then when you actually practice out, you may go, oh, shit, never mind. This is not very good. Namely, like, I'm very curious and concerned still a little bit, to a lesser degree, about the terrain rules. Namely, because GW just, with 8th edition, basically gave zero, you know, any reason to really be excited about terrain. You know, yeah, okay, you could block line of sight in some capacity and stuff with stuff that was legitimately like a flat out wall, but infantry could just magically teleport through walls All it would take is having a teeny tiny, teeny itty bitty microscopic window, but if you could see through it to some target on the other side, you could just snipe the shit out of it, and so on and so forth. So these new rules definitely are a much better step in the right direction, in my opinion. Namely, in that it gives you a valid reason to debate on whether you want to use a particular piece of terrain or not as a defensible position. Generally speaking, the answer is going to be yes, but it's no longer, you know, it's more useful than it was with the core rules, and it is less magic box and stuff than the, the like frontline gaming rules and stuff with that, with the whole, you know, any first floor just straight up blocks line of sight crap. I feel like JW found a nice happy medium. You know, if it's on the other side of the terrain piece, it's obscured unless it's a certain size or has a certain amount of wounds and stuff. There's been some debate that giant models that may not have the right amount of wounds from the rules as they are written, it does look like even if you can fucking see some 3 foot tall thing, if it doesn't have 18 wounds, it sounds like it can't be shot at, unfortunately, from what I've seen. I'm hoping that is an oversight in the way things are, you know, written, because that makes zero sense. I feel like if something is large enough to see it from your standpoint completely out over the terrain piece, then you should be able to shoot at it in some capacity. You know, maybe it should still receive some sort of benefit of cover or something because 90% of the model is obscured by the cover. But, you know, I digress. What's really exciting, though, too, is seeing the changes, even as they relate to terrain, to like assaults and Overwatch. So now they do have like light terrain, I believe, provides you a +1 to your armor save against ranged. Heavy cover provides you a bonus to against a bonus armor save against when somebody is in assault with you, unless they are charging. I do feel like that rule is a little awkward and strange. I'm assuming that the idea is, because all these terrain rules, the way they're written is you can stack them together. The idea is if something is heavy cover, it's automatically light cover, so you still get the range defense, you know, but they are two separate rules. You just add them both onto the same piece of terrain, and there you go. But I do find it odd that the heavy cover provides you a bonus if you're already in combat from the turn before. But when somebody charges in, it doesn't. See, in my mind, personally, I'm thinking it should be the other way around. You know, to give an assault unit, you know, a reason to hesitate or question. They'd be like, this guy's really fucking dug in. I'm going to go barging in there, and this first round is going to be rough. You know, which makes sense. Once an enemy unit has established itself into your defensive line, and once they are already in there and, you know, holding their ground, it's going to be harder to use the cover to your advantage, is what I'm thinking in my mind, is the way it should be. But, you know, GW decided to do it the other way around. We'll see how it pans out in the long run. Now, that being said, too, when it comes to assaults, the whole Overwatch thing, GW has taken it upon themselves to make Overwatch a core stratagem that costs 1 CP. So you can no longer just Overwatch the shit out of everything that's charging at you. You have to, you know, decide where is this Overwatch going to be the most useful. Part of me feels like this might be a little bit of an overstep, almost a little too far. Only in terms of the fact that Overwatch was never something that was super easy to pull off, generally speaking, I should say. But some lucky dice, I've seen Overwatch, you know, stop a whole charge from actually occurring because it just did way too much devastating damage to somebody that was charging them. But I've also seen Overwatch more often than not, you know, yeah, you fire 30 shots and you don't roll a single fucking six out of the whole thing. So it just doesn't do anything. So, but that being said, I think this is a step in the right direction, for sure. I do very much like the fact that Overwatch now, outside of being the stratagem and stuff like that, that you have to spend the CP to use it, that it also has some extra boosts when using terrain. You know, getting that interaction piece between the rules is really cool. It adds a little more flair and flavor, but in my opinion, valuable flair and flavor. It's not just, oh, well, that's kind of neat, I guess. It actually gives you a reason to, you know, hold terrain and stuff like that still, even though it's no longer, you know, magic boxes or an automatic, you know, bonus and stuff, depending on the rules that you were using and playing before. But this whole defensible terrain benefit, that when an infantry unit is inside terrain, they can choose to either hold steady or set to defend. Hold steady giving them their successful Overwatch attack hits on a 5+, and then set to defend prevents them from firing Overwatch, but they get to add 1 to hit rolls in the next fight phase. So I think that's huge. You know, if you're, once again, you're limited on using Overwatch once per phase, because it's a stratagem. So only one of your units, if you've got 3 units being charged at, you can say, all right, this one is going to declare Overwatch and it's going to hold steady. The other two are going to set to defend, provided they're all in terrain that's defensible and stuff. I feel like that adds, once again, a little more flair, a little flavor. Assault armies now have better opportunities and options to get into the fight because of the fact that they don't have to constantly worry about Overwatch. But it also gives those gunline armies that used to just be able to say, eh, fuck it, whatever, I'm just going to smoke them out in Overwatch, or just keep falling back and, you know, not falling back, excuse me, just keep moving backwards and just keep gunning them down and shit. It once again gives you an option to say, all right, this terrain, I need to hold this for the mission's purposes, and it's going to give me bonuses because of it once those assaults come in. So I feel like assault armies are getting a leg up by Overwatch being pulled apart. But I also feel like the armies that are being assaulted with the defensible ability are getting some new upgrades and stuff too. So there's a lot of options there. On the note of assaults, one other really big one that they revealed yesterday, actually during the Adeptus Mechanicus faction focus, was Desperate Breakout for 2 CP as a new stratagem. This is personally, I find, very exciting. Not just because I'm an ad mech player and very much focused on the gun line, but tri-pointing will no longer be an automatic, you know, fuck your opponent sort of situation. So, in 8th edition and such, you know, the concept of tri-pointing was kind of what assault armies would focus on performing and doing, because it was kind of their main way of winning. When I've used an assault army before and stuff, and still learning about how to properly operate as an assault army, I would get into these fights where I was like, man, I'm going to smoke this guy. But because I didn't tri-point anything, yeah, I get into this fight, I roll poorly, and all he does in the next turn is he falls back, and then the rest of his army opens fire on the unit that's just standing there picking its nose now out in the open, and that's it. It's game over, you know. With this, you know, that was kind of the goal, though, was then you wanted to tri-point somebody if you could. Now, the problem with that, though, is that it created this unfair, shitty situation where someone could essentially tie down and pin down a, say, some crazy powerful unit that's got some major ranged capability but doesn't have shit in terms of, you know, close combat capabilities, and they just get bogged down by weak, shitty grots or, you know, nurglings or something that just didn't really do much except for just pin you down and be a nuisance. And now your unit gets to sit there for the rest of the game, or you have to waste resources trying to go over with a dedicated assault unit and get rid of all these, you know, nuisances, essentially. Now, to some degree, you want to have things set up in such a way that you can have units like that. Having screens or distractions, pins, etc., those are all valuable tools in the toolkit, but the way tri-pointing and the way the rules were written before kind of made it just an automatic success in so many ways. If you pin down a target that couldn't fight back, even if you couldn't kill it, if it couldn't really fight back, that just, it became boring. You know, I'm trying to think of the terminology here, but it basically makes the game non-interactive for both players at that point. The player who performed the tri-pointing doesn't have to worry about that situation anymore. He just sits there and holds that ground. You know, in fact, for most of the time, they don't want to actually kill the stuff that they've tri-pointed. They want to hold it in place and just waste that player's time, so that unit can't do anything for the rest of the game, is kind of the goal and idea. Any of these rules that we perform and stuff that locks something out and makes it so that one player can't interact with the other player, etc., or in this case, both players don't really interact with each other at all, it's just not much fun. You know, it's not exciting. It's just not enjoyable. So with Desperate Breakout, though, what can happen now is if you do get tri-pointed and you cannot move anymore, you can, for 2 CP... you get to roll a d6 for each model in your unit, and for each result of one model is destroyed. Now, that does suck for anybody who's using something that's got multiple wounds and stuff like that. You know, because then if you end up rolling badly, you're losing a bunch of models that had extra wounds to spare, and they probably could have just sat in this fight and slugged it out, but they're dead now instead. But here's the trade-off. Assuming that unit was not destroyed, you can attempt to fall back, and when doing so, the models can be moved across enemy models as if they were not there. Any model in that unit that ends its fallback move within engagement range of any enemy model is destroyed. Assuming the unit is not destroyed, it cannot do anything else this turn, even if it has a rule that would allow it to do so after falling back. So, basically the idea is, once you're pinned down in a shitty situation, you say, fuck it, I'm bolting, and even if you're tri-pointed, even, you know, if you're going to lose a few models or something, you can then get them out of that situation. Now, this does once again put that assault unit standing there picking its nose, just waiting for the enemy to open fire on it and gun it down. But what it's going to do is it's going to make armies that are focused on just tri-pointing and pinning, they're going to have to actually learn to interact with opponents instead. They're going to have to learn, like, especially if it's an assault focused army, they're going to have to learn that, all right, I can't just win now by pinning shit down. You know, I cannot just win by pinning shit down with cheap models and then just taking over the board because the game's boring and nothing's going on. Nobody's shooting anything. Nobody's killing anything. We're just both sitting there. While I have, since you probably built your army with a bunch of cheap, shitty fodder infantry to begin with, you've got all the enemy's valuable stuff tied up while you have all of your cheap shit just running around capturing objectives, etc. Like I said, it gets kind of boring and samey then. You still want to give armies an opportunity to play certain play styles, but you don't want it to become a situation where that is the only way to win, and or, yeah, there's other ways to win, but it's so much easier and so much better to do it that way that people are just going to naturally choose to do it that way. Having these stratagems to give you opportunities to counter specific builds creates a situation where more people are going to use more varied builds, in my mind. You're going to be in a situation where people are going to go, all right, my assault army is now more viable than ever, but all of my fancy tricks I used to use that would allow me to do things like tri-pointing and pinning and stuff like that, those are no longer auto wins, you know? So you're getting more viability while having this, while trying to avoid any one faction or any one playstyle overcoming overwhelming the field and just being an auto win, like I said. So But the obvious goal and hope with a new release and stuff is, once again, to take those weaknesses from the previous, junk them, take the things we liked, raise them up even further, etc. You know, having assault armies becoming viable is great, but we don't want it and we can't have it at the cost of making ranged armies non-viable, obviously. And that's part of why you have these, like I said, these counterpoints and stuff to each other. I do think also, too, with 9th edition, as far as balancing things goes, moving command points to, by the sounds of it, they're going to be detached from how you build your army at this point. Everybody's going to get the same amount of command points to start with. I'm sure there's going to be some little things here and there. If you include this character, you include that character, you use this particular thing or whatever, there might be some minor little differences in the amount of command points that each player gets. But it's not going to be that overwhelming change in difference. You know, you're not going to have, all right, well, in order for, you know, this guy's playing as Astra Militarum, so he's starting off with 40,000 billion frickin' command points. And then I'm sitting over here with, you know, my custodies or something, and I've got half a command point to work with. You know, it's no longer going to be this way. You're instead looking at everybody, depending on the size of the mission, the amount of points being used, etc., that everybody gets the same amount of command points. I believe so, anyways. It's supposed to be an equal amount. And then what you can do is, if you want to add an extra detachment, you can spend a command point to add an extra detachment. And I don't know if there's going to be, you know, once again, we don't have the actual core rule book or anything. I don't know if there's going to be anything where if you want to take stuff from a separate faction altogether, that it's going to cost even more command points. I honestly hope that's the case. Something to really, once again, try to encourage people to play single faction style without completely fucking over people who want to mix and match stuff. That whole mix and match soup thing, we got to keep working on trying to pull that back, because once again, it becomes this hyper efficient one note meta if we go that route. But also, too, the reverse can happen where it becomes a hyper efficient one note meta when everybody is forced to be single faction, and then it turns out, well, only this faction and this build is, you know, viable. So we need to have some of that mix and match for flavor. But we don't want to make it something where it's so imbalanced in favor of, you know, once again, Imperium armies in particular. We're very guilty of this, but in favor of whoever can spend the least amount of points to get the most amount of command points wins. You know, command points and stratagems, I think, were one of the most wonderful, beautiful things they added in with 8th edition, but it clearly didn't work as it was written very well. So I think all these adding in more core stratagems to spend command points is going to make command points more valuable overall, to counter the fact that they're not going to be mega stupidly rare for certain factions and then just throw away chump change for other factions. I think that's going to definitely change up the meta immensely overall. So I'm particularly, once again, excited about the changes with the way that you're building these factions and stuff. I think it's going to provide extra tactical flavor that no two players will be playing the same faction the same way, because of the fact that everybody has those equal playing fields amount of command points. So, but like I said, I'm sure there'll be some people who are going to find ways to muck around with it, because I'm sure there are rules that provide a few extras here or take away a few extras there. There clearly are, you know, they're actually going to encourage spending more command points through the use of being able to have multiple warlord traits or specialist attachments type stuff from Vigilus, which is also still compatible with 9th edition, relics, etc. They're definitely trying to drive more players to want to, with the amount of rules coming out that are pre-game, you know, before the dice even roll. They're definitely trying to encourage players to spend more command points on that stuff up front, to customize and flavor their army the way they see fit. But then providing an extra command point every turn, the way Age of Sigmar does, is going to make it so that while command points are going to be more rare for factions that they weren't rare before and more available for factions that they weren't so available before, you're not going to be guarding them at all costs, and at the same time not just spending them willy-nilly. You know, there's hopefully going to be a better, more central balance in those regards. So, but let's go ahead and move on to some other cool stuff with that good old 9th edition that we're seeing here. Personally, I'm really excited as well about this new Crusade system. I know that that's not exactly a mega competitive thing, but I'm curious to really see how GW pulls this off and makes the Crusade system viable. It sounds like there's going to be a way to basically have a veteran campaign system, but what's cool is that it's not going to be limited just to when you're playing a specific campaign. That you can have your army and have all this, you know, have all these features and functions and upgrades to the army through that veteran system, the Crusade system there, but that if a player's like, yeah, no, I don't want to play Crusade, I just want to play straight up, that's cool, boom. You can use the same army all the same. And if somebody's like, yeah, you know what, that's fine, you can just totally use all the upgrades and everything you've already unlocked in Crusade. So, which is really cool. And personally, I think it's a great opportunity to get, you know, more casual gamers or newer gamers in particular more into the hobby. I'm kind of hoping to use this edition launch as more of an opportunity to have my kids more involved and stuff into the hobby, because of the fact that you have all this additional narrative flair and fun casual things that you can work with while still being a super competitive game if you want it. You know, I think that's a great step in the right direction. So, and speaking of things that are steps in the right direction, the changes with characters that we are seeing with 9th edition is also extremely exciting. Namely, with the change that Lookout Sir has had. At this point, it says here, models cannot target a unit that contains any character models with a wounds characteristic of 9 or less with a ranged weapon while that unit is within 3 inches of any other friendly vehicle or monster unit, or while it is within 3 inches of any other friendly units that have 3 or more models, unless that character unit is both visible to the firing model and it is the closest enemy unit to the firing model. The maelstrom of battle makes it difficult to pick out such individuals. Ignore other enemy character models with a wounds characteristics of 9 or less when determining if the target is the closest enemy unit to the firing model. Whew, that's a lot of wordage. What does it mean? So, basically, with the old character rules in 8th edition, if a character was not the closest target, unless it had, you know, 10 or more, I think it was before as well, wounds, you couldn't target it. It didn't matter if they were literally out in the ever-living fucking open. You could not target them. They could totally be blatantly out in the open, but because another model that's on the other side of the battlefield, even relative to you, is still technically closer by like half an inch because of this, the way they place the two models, you can't shoot at the character. End of story. You know, I had one game in particular a while back that during a league game that was extremely frustrating because the enemy had, I had done a number of damage, admittedly both of us had done an immense amount of damage on each other, but by the end of the game, he had, I think, a watch captain, because it was a death watch, and a librarian, I think. He had these two characters, literally everything else in front of them was gone. They were standing out in the literal open, they weren't in terrain, they weren't in buildings, etc. I've got these doom crawlers all pointed at them and all this other shit just ready to just mop the shit out of them. But inside of a building that was about halfway across the battlefield, like on the halfway point of the field, and all the way to the left of my left from where I was looking out at the field, because they are there, I could not shoot at those characters. And what made it even worse, though, too, was the fact that I couldn't even shoot or kill that unit, because that unit was in assault with another one of my units inside that building. So I could not shoot at them, nor could I shoot at those characters that are literally out in the open by themselves. It's a terrible rule overall. I think it's just garbage the way it was written. So I'm very excited to see these changes with this whole lookout sir thing, that they have to be within at least 3 inches of, you know, friendly units of theirs in order to take advantage of that lookout sir rule. They can no longer be, you know, like I said, these models were probably 3 or 4 feet even, probably closer to 3 feet now that I think about it, away from the closest enemy unit, or closest friendly unit for them, I suppose. And like I said, way out in the wide fucking open. Personally, I feel like they should add the caveat there that if there is something closer, but it cannot be targeted for reasons of being completely out of line of sight, and or being in engagement range with another unit of yours, because you can't fire into the engagement, I think at that point, I don't care if they're within three inches of a friendly unit or something like that. If the friendly unit is that's in question is, once again, not targetable, then that seems like a silly, shitty way to write that too. You should still be able to interact at all times in some capacity with a model, not with that model specifically, but with the game as a whole. I mean, I had several tanks that literally just couldn't do anything. They weren't in danger, they weren't being attacked, they weren't in assault. They could just, the only option they had was move. They could move, but they couldn't shoot at anything at all. Even though there were units and targets that should have technically been viable. So, but yeah, overall, definitely a lot of really good changes that we're seeing here, like I said, with 9th edition being released. So I know that there's going to be a lot more stuff over, you know, the coming weeks and whatnot as time goes on. As we get closer to launch, we're going to see a lot more stuff. I'm trying to think if there's anything else right off the bat that jumped out to me as, you know, some really big overall core mechanic changes to the game that really jumped out to me. Nothing else is coming to mind right this split second and stuff, although I'm probably going to be doing another episode next week, obviously, or that's my goal anyways. Doing another episode here in the near future next week. We will, you know, if there's anything else, I'm sure there will be some more information coming out about 9th edition that we will end up covering then at that point in greater detail as we go. So, but for right now, those are just, like I said, those are some of the biggest standpoints in the changes for 9th edition for me. Oh, actually, you know what? There was one other thing that did stand out. It just popped back into my head. And I knew there was one other one, and I'm like, what did I forget to write down? What am I missing here that I wanted to talk about? The points changes. So as of right now, you know, admittedly, I was just going to say as of right now, we're going to use the same points, but maybe not. They might be doing something like with 9th launching, that's kind of like a chapter approved sort of dealio that just includes all of the new points changes. But what they're doing is they're actually increasing points costs across the board for all armies, which seems like a step backwards from what we saw in 8th edition. 8th edition was, for the most part, this constant lowering and lowering and lowering of points. But admittedly, that wasn't necessarily fixing any core problems with the game, you know. So with some armies, yeah, it did help with viability, but with others, it didn't do enough. That the game itself needed a great big rules overhaul to make these armies viable, you know. Just lowering their points, okay, yeah, I could fit a lot more of them on the field, but they're still not fun to use. You know, they still get smoked all the same. There's just more targets for the enemy to smoke. you know, and that's all it kind of turned into, which just sucks. With these changes now being made, both with the size of the missions, which they are changing the size of the board in turn too, minimum sizes, though, not maximum, minimum sizes, which I think is a cool step. I think it adds some extra potential to your gameplay. By raising the points on all units, it's going to, A, help with increasing the speed of the games themselves, because you won't be able to have, you won't be spending, you know, an hour on turn one just moving all of your fucking models everywhere. And, B, you're also going to be able to, you know, this is once again a good step for, admittedly, newcomers to the game, less for veterans, but more for newcomers. You're going to be able to just buy less stuff and bring less stuff to the table. You know, you don't have to drop, you know, thousands of dollars just to have your starting force. You can, it's still going to be pricey, but you can spend a few hundred dollars instead to get something to at least get you playing. In particular, with the addition of the different mission sizes and stuff too, that adds some extra viability in those terms as well, giving players well-written and actually thought-out option to play games with smaller points values and even smaller model counts than currently at a smaller points value. So I'm curious to see how this will work overall. I think it's going to be good and healthy for the game from a long-term standpoint. But obviously, my hope is that they continue, just like what they were doing before with Chapter Approved, is that they continue to reassess at least annually where those points values are sitting for meta purposes and stuff, for competitive purposes specifically, excuse me. Because if we don't, you might end up having some wild swing the other way, and then the game just, once again, will start becoming samey once people figure out this works better than that, etc. Arbitrarily changing stuff just because it's good is not exactly smart or wise either, but making no changes is clearly a terrible choice. So, but I think that's it for today. Like I said, this is recorded on Monday. At this point, it will not be live until Tuesday, at least, as I do have to go to work, unfortunately, soon. But yeah, it was fun, though. It's, like I said, it's been a while. So I do apologize if I'm a little more scattered than usual. It's just trying to get back into the flow of doing this. So, but thank you guys for listening. As always, follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/theregimentalpodcast. Follow me on Twitter @theregimentalvox. And then Patreon as well. So, it's been so long since I've actually said all of this stuff that I'm trying to remember what the... oh, goddamn, I can't even think of the wording. All the fucking links are, actually. So, yeah, here we go. So, patreon.com/theregimentalvox. There it is. So, but yeah, so feel free to follow me on any of those if you wish. The more the merrier, by all means. Also, too, if you have anything constructive you want to add or whatever else, you can message me through the Facebook and or comment on there, etc. I'm happy to talk shop with people, once again, as long as people are constructive and shit. That's all I ask. But thank you guys for listening. I will catch you all next week. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.